Welcome to Treasures in Heaven. This is a podcast for young Catholics where we talk about money, travel, and more. I am your host, Victoria from ConsumerCatholic.com, and I'm talking to Alan Migliorato today about his new book, The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. And we get into how you can go about healing the father-daughter relationship, whether you're a father yourself or whether you're a daughter. Or even if you're neither, this conversation has some beautiful points about healing any sort of relationship with the help of God. Now, you'll probably notice at one point there was a little bit of an audio issue, but what Alan was saying was that his daughter was asking his wife why he wasn't going to church. And you'll see why that was an important part of the story. I hope you enjoy. First, can you just tell us a little bit about your life? You're obviously a husband, a father, so tell us a little bit more about that.
I'm sorry. I really don't talk about that. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, you're like, what? Who is this guy? All right. So, yeah, I was, I got married to my wife 26 years ago, this December 10th. And about 3 years after that, we started having children. And so I have three daughters, and they're 16, 19, and 22, almost 19 and 22. And I'm just very blessed, and I don't deserve any of it, but God gives us things that we can handle, not the things that we deserve, thank God, because they're just a blessing to me. So I'm so happy with having three girls. And I was raised an only child, in a very strong Italian masculine household. And so it was like, hey, so son, you're gonna have a boy now. And it was like, well, no, I'm having a girl and having another girl and having another girl. So I have three. So it's taught me a lot, really, about what being a man is actually about. We think we know what it's about when we're younger as men, but as we grow older and we find out that's not what being a man's really about. My daughters and my wife have taught me more about that than I could have ever learned ever anywhere else.
That's really beautiful. So I'm curious. You were an only child. Do you think that made it more difficult for you to be a father to daughters versus had you had some sisters?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't have answered that because I only have experience from my experience. So possibly, I mean, I know that I did a lot of things, wrong. You know, I started a business about 20 years ago and, I worked 7 days a week and, I wouldn't go to church. And actually one of the inspirations for me writing this book was when I used to have a business and I would do 7 days a week to make all my customers happy. And it's in the first part of the book. And I talk about the importance of, introducing your daughters to God and keeping them focused on God throughout their lives. How come daddy doesn't come with us? When she was walking out of my office and it hit me, and I was like, my gosh, I didn't realize that she did this, and my wife just, said, well, daddy's working family, and as they walked out the door and I heard the conversation trail off and I was thinking, oh my gosh, you're like, this is not right. So I went home and it bothered me, it bothered me all day. And I came home at night and I told my wife, I said, this really bothered me today. And she said, oh, you're doing what you have to do. And, you're providing for our family and we're proud of you and don't let it bother you. And, we can figure out a time to go to church together when you're not working. But the problem was I was always working. And so the next morning, my daughter put my daughter to bed. And the next morning I got up and left before my daughter woke up. And my daughter came running to my wife when I was gone. And my wife calls me laughing about this. My wife's got a sick sense of humor. And she's laughing. She's like, our daughter Angela's crying. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, she woke up because you were gone. She said, I don't have a daddy. My daddy's gone. He's never here. And I was like, that's not funny. And she's like, well, it's funny the way her little tears were coming down her cheeks. And she's so cute. And I was like, okay, here's something wrong with you. So I said, this is just, it really bothered me. And so when I came home that night, I said, I'm not working on the weekends anymore. I'm not going to work on Sunday. I'm going to make that day just for my family. And it kind of turned me around a bit. And the minute that I stopped working on Sunday, it really started to benefit, really enrich my life with my family. Cause I realized I'm working my finger to the bone. That's great. And we should work hard, but we should also work hard at having a family. And I felt that I wasn't teaching my daughter about the important things in life. If all I taught her was about how important money was, then how is that really passing on the gift of God's love? So, and I didn't feel that it was. And so I stepped back and started staying with them on Sundays all day, no matter what. And it definitely upset some customers, and too bad. I lost a couple of customers and I picked up 10 times as many.
So how many years ago was that when you made that decision to stop working on Sundays?
About 19 years ago.
Okay. So you, at that time, so one of your daughters wasn't even born yet. So you had two at the time?
I had one at the time, but it was right before my middle daughter was born, and she's almost 18, and my wife was pregnant at the time. So almost 19 years.
Okay, gotcha. So you stopped working on Sundays. Does that mean you started going back to church?
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the main things that I, you know, that I started doing, because my wife would take my daughter to church with my mom, and you know, they would, or my grandma would go, you know, you know, it was just, they were wondering where I was, you know. It's like, you know, talk about what happened in church when I got home, and it was, you know, more important what happened in my day and my life at the time than listening to what my family had to say about their day. And I certainly wasn't focused on God. I mean, I wasn't far away from God. I was never an atheist. I was always Catholic and very Catholic, but it, you know, I put something ahead of that, and that was my work. And I started to see, you know, my family notice. And so I started to go to church with them. We would, you know, spend the whole day together. We'd go out to a park or just, you know, sit and have a picnic or whatever, and just kind of talk about, you know, what we heard in church, you know, and breaking it down from a very young level when she was 4 years old, 3 or 4 years old, till, you know, as they grew. And a cool thing happened too, Victoria. I always sat by my wife in church, but then my daughters, as they grew older, would always take turns sitting next to my other side in church. So it was like they looked forward to like being able to sit by me on my side that my wife wasn't sitting on while we were in church. And my daughter said, you know, why can't I can sit on one side and then, you know, my sister can sit on the other side. And I said, your mom's important, so she needs to sit here. And then so they would, you know, take turns riding in the front with me and in my car as they grew older. And, you know, it was just a very important thing for me. And I started to tell you earlier, my father growing up was a professional boxer and always on the road. And when he wasn't boxing, he was umpiring. So he was on the road and really good looking guy. And women did not stay away from him, and he never really said no a whole lot. And so I have a stepsister who's 4 years older than me, and she just got married and went to her wedding up in Pennsylvania, and she's gorgeous and she's beautiful inside and out. And one of the things that, you know, she always was interested in older guys growing up. And it was the, you know, like we were talking about a minute ago, the daddy problem,
you know, where
daddy issues, dad, my dad wasn't around for her when she was growing up. And she tried to put, not that she was not doing immoral things, but she would, you know, maybe stay with guys longer than she should, or be with the guy that she shouldn't have been with, just because, you know, he was that masculine male figure in her life. And so many girls today, and you can see it on social media, you know, and I certainly don't want this, our interview, to sound like I'm finger wagging, you know, and shaking my head the whole time at the youth of today, because that's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is that there's so much more to these young girls that are, you know, exposing themselves online and seeing who can get the most likes. And there's just a lot more to life than, you know, being accepted by somebody outside of your family for the wrong reasons, you know. And so I think fathers need to step it up, you know, and from one man to other men that are listening to this out there, you know, it's time to step it up and be a real man for your family. Because, you know, drinking the most beer on Sunday and going to the most strip clubs and seeing how many women you can sleep with when your wife's not around, that is not being a man. And, you know, I don't know anyone who is more masculine than me, and you know, being with three women in my household, I still haven't lost being masculine, but it's in a healthy and supportive way for the women in my life.
And yeah, in the way God intended.
Of course. That's the reason that it is that way, is God intended us to support the women in our lives, to love our wives, you know, like we love the church. And, you know, when these men that don't have love for the church and they don't have respect for God, they put other things, you know, they're thinking with, you know, their different parts of their body that they shouldn't be thinking with. And they're putting other women in front of their wives, and the, you know, the prettiest and the, you know, the one who wears the least on the beach, you know, that's who we look at. And you know, it's human nature to be attracted, but you know, your desire, your love, your effort needs to go into your family and your wife, and your daughters are going to see that. And that's the kind of man they're going to look for.
Right. So you were saying you're really encouraging men to step up and be true men. So how can someone listening who might have a damaged relationship with their daughter start to fix that?
The biggest problem that men have is their pride. And women have pride too, but men have pride. And I don't know if you've ever, I know you just recently got married, but I don't know if you've been on a road trip with your husband when, you know, before you guys are married or since, but if you are lost, he doesn't want to stop and ask for directions. No man wants to stop and ask for directions. There's thousands of comedians that talk about this kind of stuff because it's true. We don't want to ask. We don't want to admit that we're wrong or that we don't know something. And so when we do something that injures our family, it's very hard for a lot of men to say, hey, I'm wrong. And I want you to know that I was wrong. And this was about me. It's not about you. I'm wrong. And I apologize and mean it. You know, a lot of times the men apologize to their wives because they want to get rid of the silent treatment, or they just want to, you know, they want to live in peace. They don't want any problems. So, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, whatever. You know, and sometimes that doesn't even happen. Sometimes you have men that just hold a grudge forever. And it's, you know, life is too short. Life is just way too short to not, you know, to have pride and let that get in the way of your relationship. And I'll share something with you. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but you're pretty good. So I'm going to share this with you. My father, when I was in high school, was going to skydive into my homecoming football game to give me the game ball. And so I'm waiting out on the field, and I see a bunch of ambulances going by. And what happened was his parachute didn't open fully. It went around his neck on the way down, and it half opened, but he died from on his attempt.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a horrible event. Horrific, horrific part of time in my life, you know.
Oh.
But I will tell you this. It changed me. The first thing it did is it made me angry with God for a while. I wasn't a non-believer. I was just angry. But what happened was it made me realize how short the time that we get to spend with our family is, you know. And I know that, you know, my father would have given anything with all the things that, you know, that he did wrong when I was growing up. He would give anything if he could spend another hour with me or another minute with me, you know, just to talk to me and you know, put his arm around me and just tell me things are going to be okay. And, you know, just being a father. And when I thought about, you know, my father dying, and I, you know, I thought, my God, what if, you know, something, God forbid, was to happen to me, and my girls might not have, you know, a good experience or remember good things about me. And so you just never know, you know. And so it's too short, and it doesn't matter where the wrong is. Sometimes you just got to put the wrong away and just say, look, let's put the past behind us. I love you and I care about you, and I want to have a good relationship with you from here on out, because, you know, life's too short to hold grudges and hate.
Right. And thank you so much for sharing that. I think that fathers apologizing to their children is probably really difficult. And I don't have kids yet. So I'm sure maybe when I'm a mom that maybe I'll have a hard time apologizing to my children when I surely make mistakes. But how do you think men can get to a place where they're more comfortable apologizing? Because there was, there's this podcast I actually like to listen to. It's called The Place We Find Ourselves. And the host is a therapist, but he's also a pastor. He's Christian, but not Catholic. But one of the things he says, which I find so amazing, is that it's not about getting it right 100% of the time as a parent, because you're not going to. He says it's about when you get it wrong, can you repair that injury? Can you go back and say, I know I got that wrong? And so I, you know, my view, like as a newlywed, is that, okay, we're going to make mistakes as parents. I'm not super concerned about that, but I'm concerned about making sure that when I do make a mistake, that I can make amends with my child.
Oh, absolutely. It's so important. And I think the way the step, the one step men need to take is to pray about it, because God will be there for you. You have to desire this change to happen in your life. You know, I mean, we can do all kinds of things on our own, but we can't do everything on our own. But you know, our scripture tells us that with God, anything is possible. And when we say anything, we also mean everything. Right. I mean, I know that's a kind of a deep theological thought, but if we think about it and slow that process down, if we ask God, please, you know, show me, help me be humble and help me get rid of this pride. I don't want to lose my family. If that really is your desire, then God will give you these opportunities. And that's kind of what's scary about God sometimes is that, you know, you ask for patience, he doesn't give you patience. He gives you the opportunity to be patient. And so, you know, we ask for, you know, please help me remove the pride from my life. He's going to give you opportunities to remove the pride from your life. But ultimately, that boils down to it being up to us as men to take that first step. I mean, no one's going to do it for us. And I see too many relationships. I work with girls in youth groups all over who are broken because their fathers, you know, said something to them years ago, and neither of them have forgiven one another. And it's just not worth it, you know? And I tell sometimes I tell the story that I told you, which is a true story about my father, and these girls will cry and their fathers will cry when I speak with them, and things sometimes get mended and sometimes they don't. You know, they think that that's a horrible story and that they're sad that it happened to me. But my point with telling that story, and I really don't share it that often, but my point with telling that story is to say, listen, what if you weren't here tomorrow? I mean, what if? Just because you're not here doesn't mean your daughter's not here. How is this going to affect her life? So, you know, it's time to put our pride aside and say, listen, if I'm wrong, I screwed up. I mean, I really messed this up. Sometimes you come home from work angry and, you know, you're short with your kids, or they come home from school all angry and they're short with you. And just to slow it down to say, hey, you know, you're having a bad day. I'm sorry, but, you know, or I'm having a bad day and I'm sorry, but, you know, I don't want to be arguing with you. I love you too much. So I'm sorry. Let's just move on.
Right. And those are beautiful words. I'm sorry, are beautiful words. And as you're talking, I'm thinking with what you're saying about, you know, sometimes men come home from work and they've had a stressful day. Do you ever find that men feel like their worth comes from what they can provide to the family in terms of financially and physically, like a roof over the head? And because my perspective is, I think sometimes men, and I don't want to generalize, but I sometimes see that men and fathers don't realize just how much of an emotional need their children have and how much they want that from their dad. And how, yes, we of course need our fathers to provide for the family, but not just in those ways, but emotionally, mentally, and just having time together.
Yeah, absolutely. You're hitting it right on the head, Victoria. It's, you know, we provide money, but if that's all we're providing, then, you know, that's what you're teaching your daughter to look for. You know, I heard, it might have been my wife that said it. We got an argument, and it was my wife. We got an argument when my kids were young, you know, and these are things that add up, you know. And I said something I shouldn't have said, and she said, "Is that how you'd want a man to talk to our daughter someday?" And it hit me hard. Like, you know, it stopped our argument right away. And I said, no, it's not. And I said, and that sucks that I just said that to you and I didn't mean it. And I'm sorry. And I was just angry. And it really kind of, it stopped our conversation or stopped our argument and started our conversation, you know? And so she's been a wonderful wife to have. Obviously we have our ups and downs, you know, everybody thinks she's a saint because she's married to me, but she's not. And they say, "Oh my gosh, how are you married to Alan for so long?" And she says, "Well, you know, that's my ticket to heaven right there. This is my repentance right now. I'm living it out on earth." But in all seriousness, you know, I love her very much, and I would never want to do anything to hurt her because she was somebody's daughter, you know, and she is somebody's daughter. My father-in-law is a wonderful man, and I always think, you know, like at one point, she was young and at home and with him, and he wouldn't have let me talk to her that way. And I wouldn't let another man talk to my daughter that way, you know. And more importantly, my daughters wouldn't let another man talk to them that way. And so I'm not going to talk to their mother that way because then they're going to see, look, this is what, you know, this is what a man's supposed to be like. So we need to provide, you know, all kinds of things for our family. Money is one of them, but not the only thing that we need to provide.
So if a daughter is listening to this, I mean, most of our listeners are women, but is there anything that a daughter could do, regardless of her age, if she feels like her relationship with her dad is strained and she wants to go about repairing it, but her dad isn't someone who's willing to say, you know what, I'm going to swallow my pride and I'm going to apologize for all these past transgressions. What way can a girl find peace in her relationship with her father if it's really not what she wanted and not really how God desired for the relationship to go? And I ask this because I think I see this so often with so many girls my age that they have a really rocky relationship with their dad and it just doesn't really seem to get better.
Right. You know, there's so many levels that I can answer to this, and it has to start off slowly, Victoria. So I would say that there has to be that desire, you know, and open and vulnerable, honest communication from a girl to her father. If the dad is a kind of man that is not, you know, really caring a whole lot, I have a very big compassionate streak. And so I always feel that maybe he was never taught to care. You know, maybe he never had to care. Maybe he never knew that you needed him to care. And it's not your fault that he's like that. It's not your fault that your father is, you know, ignoring you or not paying attention to you. However, if you're letting your pride get in the way of saying you're sorry because, or you know, I want a better relationship with you than that we've had in the future, if you're letting your pride, if a girl that's listening to this is letting her pride get in the way of that, then she's just as bad as he is. Because it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's always going to work. It just means that sometimes you have to plant that seed and let him process. You know, maybe a conversation like, you know, Dad, I want to talk to you. We've never really been that close. And I've always been really sad because of that. You know, and I love you. And, you know, I would like a closer relationship with you. Is there a reason that, you know, that do you feel the same way that I do, that we're not close? And those are vulnerable words to say to somebody. I mean, you know, imagine going up to somebody that you love who you just don't feel that love back from and asking why. Why is it that you don't, you know, that you don't feel the same way I do? You know, did I come into your relationship? Do you feel like I ruined your relationship with Mom? Do you feel like, you know, I put too much strain on you? You know, these are not things that I meant to do. These are not things that were done intentionally. And I love you and I want a better relationship. I mean, that would probably shock most men into saying, oh, crap, you know, like, I never realized that she cared. And I've had a father say that to me before, you know. It was Father's Day weekend, and I was doing a retreat for a church, and this girl was on it. And I said, okay, I'm going to let everybody get going here, you know, pretty soon. I know you guys want to get home with your dads. And she's like, she just kind of made a noise. And I, you know, dismissed everybody, and her dad wasn't there to pick her up yet. And I said, you okay? What's going on? And she's like, well, nothing. Everything's okay. You know how teenagers answer. I'm nothing. Everything's fine. And I said, no, really. What's going on? And she said, well, you know, you made a comment about, you know, getting home to our dad. She goes, my dad could care less. He's not even here yet. And I said, yeah, he's not, is he? I said, that sucks. I said, you know what you should do? She goes, what? I said, you should tell him that sucks and that you love him and that you want him to care for you. And she was like, really? She's like, I'm not going to say that. I said, why not? Yeah. I think you should say it. She's like, why? I'm not going to say that. And I go, why? I said, are you feeling a little prideful? You don't want to get your feelings hurt? I said, how's it feel right now that he's not here? I mean, you're already hurt, right? She said, yeah. I said, what do you have to lose? You know, I mean, if you have a bad relationship with him already, telling him that you love him and that you want a better relationship can't possibly make things worse. And so when he came there, she said, I watched her. She walked across this field and grabbed his hand, and he started walking toward the car, and she, you know, gently pulled him over to a picnic table, and they sat down, and I was there with other, you know, doing a parent retreat right after, or doing a parent session right after. And I watched her, and she was there for an hour and a half to 2 hours just talking. They both had tears coming down their face, and they, you know, walked away with their arms around one another. And I know that they have a better relationship today because of it. Doesn't always happen that fast. Mm-hmm. But what do you have to lose? I mean, you know, too many people hold these feelings further on into life, you know, and you have to offer your father an opportunity to be a man if and teach him sometimes how to be a man if he hasn't been one for you already.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful, beautiful story. And I love that you've been able to have that effect on young girls and give them this message that they need to hear, because I think that as women, we easily internalize if we don't get the attention or the affection that we want from our fathers, that we make it about ourselves and we absolutely forget our identity in Christ. And that's when we start trying to date men that who end up not being good for us. And I know there's that psychological, I forget what the phenomenon is, but basically recreating the father-daughter relationship through dating so that you could, if you can just fix the dating one, it will, you know, you think it'll fix the real relationship. And we do that almost basically subconsciously.
Can I share something with you real quick? I'm sorry
to
interrupt you.
Please.
Like I said, I'm Italian, so are you. We're going to be interrupting each other the whole time. So let's just get over it and have
please.
A piece of bread.
Go right ahead.
So I want to say something I think is very important. You mentioned, you know, that it's wonderful that I'm able to have an effect like that on girls that, you know, young girls that I speak with. I have to disagree. I don't feel that I have an effect on anyone. I feel that this is God, you know, that this is Jesus speaking through me. This is the Holy Spirit working through me. And I never, ever take credit for anything like that. And it's not to make myself seem like a martyr, but if we don't become less, then God can't become more. And so we have to be that for our family. We have to make ourselves less, make God the focus. And all we're doing is, as men, is reflecting God's life, light into our families and into our lives. But it's absolutely not about me. And everything that I do, I always told my daughters when they were young, and I still tell them, you know, now, you know, they're all at the, you know, dating age or young dating ages now. And, you know, I always tell them, listen, every man in your life, everyone, even I, will disappoint you at some point in your life. I won't mean to, but I will. Everyone will. But God never will. God will never disappoint you. And so you keep your focus on Jesus and he will not disappoint you because he loves you and he cares for you even more than I'm able to, but I love you more than anything in this universe. And so that shows you how much God loves you. But I think if we refocus, you know, sometimes we get in our own way. And especially with a relationship with our fathers, we get in our own way. And so we got to get that pride out of there and say, you know, is this how God would want me to handle this? Is this the reason that Jesus put us here, you know, for this such a short time with one another to be miserable? Or did he want us to work through this and for me to learn from it? Because we never learn unless we're uncomfortable. We never grow unless we're uncomfortable. So if you're hearing this, if you're hearing Victoria and I talk and you're falling into this category where, you know, you have a strained relationship with your father, or you have a strained relationship, your husband has a strained relationship with his daughter, or if you're a man that's listening to this and you need to step it up and be a man, just do it. Like, what are you waiting for? Be a man, put God first in your family's life, and let's step it up, man.
I love that. And as you were talking, I was also thinking that pride, this just doesn't play out in relationships with people, but in so many different things, our pride is like a roadblock. Pride has definitely been an issue for me. And so that's something I appreciate the reminder of God speaking through you to me about pride. I'm wondering, and I'm sort of asking this a little bit selfishly, but since I did just get married, I know that, you know, they say that when your daughter gets married, it's a really big deal to the father because now the daughter is stepping into a new relationship where her husband is now number one, or I guess really number two behind God. Can you give us some insight? Because I know some of our listeners are around my age. What is that like for a dad to, in a sense, give his daughter away and see her get married? Like what kind of goes through your head?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't have an answer directly for you because none of my daughters are married. I always tell people nuns don't get married. So I'm hoping that we take that route. No, but you know, boyfriends are important, you know, and knowing how to navigate the boyfriend daughter, you know, fiance daughter and husband daughter relationship. I'm assuming that will not be much different than having, you know, a boyfriend or any difficult part, you know, for a father. The hard part about being a father who really loves his daughters is letting go. You know, and my father-in-law is a wonderful, wonderful Catholic man. And, you know, he always says, you know, you don't want to get too close because then you got to let him go someday. And I always say, that's ridiculous. You know, Hooky, like, no, I'm going to get as close as I can. And then recently, I drove my daughter to college. She's an hour and a half away. And, you know, the first one, my middle one is the first one to leave because my oldest one still goes to a local college, to UCF. But my middle one is an hour and a half away. And I'm thinking it's extremely hard for me, you know, to be away from her. And, you know, but this is how I raised her. And how did she get so independent? And I'm like, oh, that's because we raised her that way. So I can't imagine that being very different than, you know, her being married. Of course, I don't know because I haven't experienced that yet. I would just say that, you know, we have to put ourselves second. And just as men, we have to get used to doing that. You know, put everybody else before you. Even when we sit down to dinner, like, you shouldn't eat first. If you're, you know, the man of the family, you should make sure your kids have food on their plate. Even if you got 5 buckets of KFC chicken, everybody should get a piece out of that and take a bite after you pray and before you eat as a man. So I think it's just, again, pride is a big underlying thing here. But, you know, as men, we have to say, I want more for you. You know, your happiness comes first.
That's so great. I love that. So you have one daughter in college, and is one graduated?
I have one is at UCF. She's about a semester away from graduating. The other one is at Florida Southern College, and my other one is in high school still.
All righty. So if one of their boyfriends was listening, you would definitely say that the men need to ask for the hand in marriage, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think that it's more out of respect. It's more of a, you know, it's like I didn't ask. You know, we were talking before we got on the air here. I didn't ask. My wife and I eloped. I kind of asked. I mean, I met him and then I kind of jokingly said, hey, I'm going to marry your daughter someday. And he was like, OK, you know, like, I'm going to shoot you someday, too. And I was thinking, you know, like, OK, just make sure I marry her quickly. So, I mean, I eloped. I didn't really, really seriously ask. But my daughters, I think, have looked for men in their lives that are respectful. And, you know, I have so many sayings. My kids are like, Dad, you have a saying for everything. And, you know, I always say when it comes to men, you know, like men, guys like to pick the low hanging fruit. So, you know, put yourself up a little higher in the tree, you know, and a little harder to reach. Don't be so easy to get. And, you know, you'll have a guy that thinks you're worth the climb someday. And my daughter's like, oh, my gosh, roll the eyes and like, what a cheesy thing to say. And I'm like, whatever. I mean, you're going to remember this. But I see it coming through in the way that like they choose the boys that they want to spend any kind of time with. And none of them have a boyfriend right now, but they have, you know, but they haven't had a bunch. But the ones that they've had, they've tried to keep. And, you know, when they see things that are not going the way that they think they should go, or boys, you know, will be boys. And that's a horrible thing to say, especially nowadays, and girls will be girls too, but you know, boys always want that premarital sex to happen. And, you know, my girls have said no to this point. And so, you know, that's the reason that they don't have boyfriends right now. Because, you know, as you're getting approached and you start saying no, guys look for that lower fruit on the branch, and there is something that's easier to get to. And so I encourage all the girls that I ever speak to, whenever I do a parish mission or youth missions, whenever I do retreats, one of the big things is, you know, you pull the girls aside and you say, listen, this is what guys are after. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not ancient. You know, this is going on, and you know, you've been approached for this. And if you've done this already, stop doing it. Don't do it again. And if you haven't done it, then hold on to that till you get married. So, Yeah. I want my hand asked for. I want somebody, a boy that they're married to approach me and have a serious conversation with me about, you know, my concerns, if there are any, and to get my blessing.
I think that's great. And I love that you have sayings for different situations. And I can see when you were describing your daughter rolling her eyes, I could totally see that, because it's just kind of like, it's a girly thing to do. But I'm sure that they're hearing your message loud and clear, and they appreciate it. And I'm wondering too, if someone's listening and they don't have daughters, and they just have a son, what can they do either as a mother or a father to help their son to raise them in a way that they then become a really great, they're prepared really to be a great husband and a father.
That again, you're really good at this, Victoria. Another great question, like 7 or 8 in a row. I can't stop talking because of you. That's a great question. What a great pair, because I haven't shut up. So that's a great question, honestly. And when I do speak with, when I speak with young men, I have the same conversation is, I've been a young man myself, and I know that hormones get in the way and that, your desire to, to be with somebody sometimes is greater than your common sense. And so, I always think, and I talk to these young men and I say, would think about your mom for a second. I said, can you imagine her when she was your age? Would you be treating her like that? And it kind of makes them stop for a second. And you want to put things when you speak to teens and young adults, I would try to put things in their life that they say, oh, crap, like I never thought of it that way. So it just saying it's something different than they're used to hearing it. It's, would you want to hit on your mom like that? Would you want your best friend, talking about your mom like that behind her back? She's got a great body, or I can't wait to get her alone. Is that how you'd want someone talking about your mom or your sister? Or somebody in your family? And it's like, oh, no, I wouldn't, And well, then why would you talk about somebody else's like that? I mean, that's a very selfish way to think. And it's, again, it's a natural thing to, to think about these kind of things, but it's a matter of giving them the respect that they need and deserve. So there's that fine line between, wanting to exploit someone for your benefit and treating them, with desire that you have for them.
Yeah, and I have to say that my husband has such a beautiful relationship with his mom, and I love seeing that because I know that's like, they always, I don't know if you tell your daughters, but look at the way the guy treats his mom because that's how he'll treat you.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, and so I've been so blessed in that regard because my husband is just so caring and has such a beautiful relationship with his mom. And I actually say to him, I'm like, it's almost like he, and maybe this is stereotypical, but I've tended to see that the men who are more sensitive have sisters and they've had that opportunity to see how girls work. And my husband didn't have any sisters, but yet he is an extremely sensitive and caring guy. And it's funny because I was surprised when you mentioned to me that you were an only child. I know that's kind of how we started the conversation, but I'm saying all this to say that it's great to see the influence that the different family members in our life can have on the relationships that we have later in our life. And
so true.
And I have to remind myself of that too, because you're right that there are times where you mentioned like a father saying something to a child and then the child holding on to that for years and never forgetting it. And I think we've all probably had situations like that where we took something someone said and just didn't let it go. And we kind of let that be our identity. So I think that your daughters are very, very lucky girls. And I
can you say that one more time so I can play that for them later?
Right. Yeah, this is recorded. and I will say a really good friend of mine who recently lost her father to cancer. It happened fairly quickly, like from diagnosis to death. It was, I think, about just under a year. And I was actually with her when he was diagnosed. And wow. She posted something on Facebook, which was that she said something like, our relationship was complicated at best, but he was still my dad and he still taught me so much. And I thought that was really brave of her to post on social media, like acknowledging that their relationship wasn't perfect. And she also texted me saying that she just wished that she had more time with him. So sometimes, I'm thinking about your story with your dad and I think about her and it really moves me. It like breaks my heart. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, but sometimes it seems like there will always be time to reconcile and that's down the line, but we really don't know if there's going to be time and we don't have all the time in the world to repair these relationships. So I really appreciate that you're really encouraging people to not delay and to take initiative to repair these relationships, because there's really not much that's more important in life than this.
There's nothing if you're not helping your family focus on God. You know, it's a very hard thing to do, though, you know, and we don't want to be uncomfortable. No one wants to be. I mean, you don't buy pants that are seven sizes too short, too small for you and try to squeeze into them. I mean, people don't. Well, some people do, but most people don't do that because they don't want to be uncomfortable. So, you know, and that it kind of rolls over into our faith life as well. It's like, I don't want to be uncomfortable. I want to sit at the house and drink a beer and watch football on Sunday. That's where my comfort zone is. Not mine personally, but people say that, you know, and it's like, I want to get up, get dressed, go to church. You know, it's early. Why do I have to go to 10 o'clock mass? Why do I have to go to 8 o'clock mass? You know, it's ridiculous. I'm just going to skip today. I had a long day at work and a long week at work. And, you know, and that rolls over into our faith life. And we think we have all this time, you know, and God bless your friend, you know, I'll pray for her. But, you know, you think about things like that. And it's, you know, it chokes me up because we don't have all that time. I'll say this, though. God puts opportunity in our way. And so I really believe that, you know, the turn that our interview has taken is where it's talking about repairing relationships is for a reason. And I think that people that are hearing this, they just need to understand that they're hearing these words for a reason. And it may be time, you know, to step it up a little bit and get in that uncomfortable zone and see what happens, because no one wants to look like a fool, but no one also wants to feel like a fool, you know. And I guarantee you, you know, if your friend had another week with her dad or another year with her dad, that, you know, she would do things differently and wish that she could have done things differently and he could have done things differently. And it's just important to, you know, to take that time to reconcile. And even if the other person doesn't want to, even if the other person doesn't accept it right away. So I always say, you know, when you go into these kind of situations, don't have any expectations. Just go in and speak from your heart and don't worry about the reply that you get. You know, be pleasantly surprised if it's a good reply. I forget what I think. I don't know who it was. It was some philosopher that used to say, if you think that the vase is already broken, then you won't be disappointed when it breaks. And so that's how you got to approach these relationships too, is, you know, it's already broken. So like really can't get any worse. So you just got to go and keep working on making it better.
Yeah, totally. Amen. And I will say that it's only been recently, probably in the last couple years, that I actually believed that praying to God and talking to him about some of my broken relationships would actually help, because I would have this mindset that, all right, God, you can't control people. You give us free will. So there's no point in me praying to you about this person because you can't actually change them. And right. That really held me back for a while. But I actually realized, and it took many little experiences. There wasn't one major aha moment. But when I finally realized that God actually could transform some of my relationships, and by praying for it and talking to him about that, inviting him into each of those relationships was absolutely going to make a difference. And it seems really obvious, but it really wasn't to me. And so I hope if anyone's listening and you think that God, there's nothing God could do to repair the relationship, it's not true. He works in amazing, amazing ways. And I've seen it in my own life. And there's been times where I've prayed so much and I'm like wondering if it makes any difference. And then something happens and it's like, wow, okay, God was listening. He was waiting for a certain moment. And then I'm just stunned at, you know, what has happened before me. So I just encourage everyone to remember that God can heal all things.
You know, the image that came to my head when you're talking about, you know, you kind of pulled back. You ever go roller skating when you're a kid and like you hold hands with somebody and you get slingshot around the, you know, like the roller rink? You ever seen somebody do that where like, you know, you whip somebody else around? That's kind of like what we do, right? With our relationship with God. Isn't that true where you like, mm-hmm. you pull back and God doesn't let go. And then all of a sudden all the, you know, anger, even from my own life that I had with God for, you know, for what I called him taking my dad from me when I was 17, you know, all of that anger just kind of got slingshotted into the future where it was like, as angry as I was, I love God that much more. And that's such a crazy, you know, thing to say, like, I went 10 steps back, I went 100 steps forward. So sometimes he does that to us where, you know, gives us those opportunities. And he doesn't do it to us. We do it to ourselves because we don't take advantage of that opportunity. So it's okay to be angry. It's okay to, you know, you don't want to be walked on by people, but you also don't want to walk on yourself and hold on to that pride.
Totally. And actually, I'll close with a quote that I saw outside of a church one time that just said, holding a grudge is like letting someone live rent-free in your head.
Amen.
And I could hear that every day for my life. I need that because I've definitely held grudges before. And if my family's listening, they are like totally nodding along. But I love our conversation. This was so fruitful. And tell our listeners where they can get a copy of your book.
Okay, so if you're interested in reading The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter, you can go to adventurecatholic.com. That's adventurecatholic.com. And you can find it there. I also have another book that's on that website, which is called Teaching Teens to Fail. And we barely scratched the surface of The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter. So if you know, if you ever want to talk again sometime about some of the other chapters, I'm more than happy to speak with you. You're wonderful.
Yeah, great. And actually, one last question came to mind as you were talking. Do you think there's any value in daughters reading this book?
I do. I do. There's definitely value in them reading it. I've had a few girls buy the book and give it to their dad for Father's Day that I know of personally. And I know that that's a big Father's Day gift, Christmas gift, you know. It's never too, and I actually, this is a quote from my book, it's never too late or early to start learning the manly art of raising a daughter.
Amen. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming and chatting with me today.
Oh, sure. It was my pleasure.
All right. So after that interview, I mean, how could you not want to read Alan's book? I just think there's so much wisdom in there, not just for fathers or daughters, but for wives, for moms, really for all of us. And if you want to order his book, you can get it at amazon.com or at his website, adventurecatholic.com. And you'll also see on there that he has another book he's written called Teaching Teens to Fail, the 5-Step Field Guide for Parenting Success. All right. God bless. Thank you so much for listening. And I will talk to you next time.